Welcome to the Data Analytics at Microsoft Roundtable. Hi, my name is Brad Sutton, and I'll be your host today. I'm on the IT Showcase team here at Microsoft, and I focus on the data analytics space all throughout the company. And we like to talk to you, our customers, around how we do data analytics in our company so that you can benefit from those best practices and lessons learned within Microsoft. Today, I'm here with four IT experts from the data analytics space. And this is your opportunity to ask direct questions of all of our SMEs and get candid answers from all of them. So first, I'd like to know a little bit more about your space and what you're going through from a data analytics perspective. So you'll see some questions below in the roundtable, and I'd like to get your experience around what you're using in your environment. Things like Power BI, SQL Server, Cortana Intelligence Suites. So if you could just fill that form out and let us know what you're using in your space, that would be greatly appreciated. But if you're not using those technologies, what technologies are you planning on purchasing in the next 12 to 18 months? That will really benefit us in how we target our answers based upon that information. With that, we'd love to have you start posting those questions, and I'm going to ask the SMEs to introduce themselves. So we'll start with Michael Lucas.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michael Lucas. I work in Enterprise Data Services, and my team's role is to really help our company get to a data culture with helping the product team understand the kind of features and capabilities we need in our product stack, as well as how do we get the best practices and the best ways to use data seen and understood by all of our employees.
My name is Dana Baxter, and I work on our internal data platform team, and our service helps internal Microsoft customers manage their environments and migrate to Azure services.
My name is Charles Lasco. I work in sales and marketing IT, and we use data through the entire life cycle of the sales and marketing process, from understanding marketing campaign effectiveness to understanding the forecast of our sales process and ensuring that customers have a voice in choosing the partners they work with.
Morning. My name is Chen Hui Zhu. I'm the SAP BI architect in a group called Enterprise Application Services. So our primary focus is to get the best value from SAP data, then also drive the technology roadmap of SAP ETL and BI.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate that. So we're going to make every effort to answer all of your questions in today's 60-minute roundtable. But if we can't get to all those questions, feel free to stick around. We're going to try to get to all those questions after the hour has been completed. If you'd like to see extended footage online, the video will be, like I said earlier, available at Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. And with that, let's get started with our first question. So, and feel free to post your questions. So one of the questions that I see here is, how do you leverage data analytics at Microsoft? What's some of the first things that you do, and how do you do that within your organization?
So when we think about data in the sales and marketing space, there's a number of different ways we want to look at it. First and foremost is, how are we doing in our sales process? What kind of pipeline do we have? How qualified is it? So we bring this data in and look at it to understand, what does our quarter look like? What's our fiscal year look like? Where do we need to apply more resources? At the same time, when we look at things like partner engagement, we want to make sure that partners have a fair field to play on when they're being chosen and selected for different opportunities to work with our customers. And also that the customer voice is a key part of that. So when we look at performance metrics and capabilities and competencies from our partners and location, so it's not just a personal relationship that drives the selection or recommendation of a partner. We're taking those personal aspects out of it from a selling perspective and letting the customer have a real voice in how they do that and what partners they engage with.
In my space, we're using data to help manage our infrastructure, and so that data is very important so we can understand what we call our estate, so we know how many of every kind of asset that we have, whether it's an on-prem server, a VM, storage services, and then all the way up into the Azure space where we're looking directly into the whatever we have deployed into our subscriptions.
Our team is an enablement team. We're trying to drive adoption of a lot of tools. Power BI is an example. And so it's interesting, we use the telemetry of this data to help us better understand, how are we driving adoption in the company? Where are there areas that adoption isn't happening? what kind of patterns are we seeing? So even for us as an enablement team trying to get adoption, the data helps us make decisions day to day about how we need to change our approach and strategy.
And from our perspective, there is always an everlasting challenge on ACP data, which is how can we derive the value from ACP data faster, cheaper, and better by leveraging modern technologies like Power BI and SQL Server. And we are able to try to replicate data from SAP onto Microsoft data platform and then get the value in that faster, cheaper, better way.
Perfect, perfect. So one of the other questions that I see here is, have you seen data analytics change at Microsoft over the last 5 years? Anyone want to take that one?
Yeah, I'd be happy to take that one. When we look at data analytics 5 years ago, at Microsoft especially, it was very much a situation where we'd have a giant spreadsheet, hundreds of KPIs that are really executive driven, an executive who might want to see how the business is performing all up. That doesn't translate well to the end seller or the partner, for example. And so, you know, oftentimes, you know, there's little value proposition for them. They didn't understand necessarily how those metrics that a senior executive would see would tie to their performance and how they could bridge that gap. And what we've seen, especially with new tools like Power BI, which make individualization and personalization much easier, is that we can ensure that when an executive looks at her scorecard, the seller underneath that executive could actually tie their individual performance back to that. So we're parsing the data and serving it up in a much simpler way. And before, when we had to do that, it was a complete customization effort. It would either be an HTML5 or Java. It would be an Excel report. Now with Power BI, we can actually just frame that up in a very specific way in a role-based manner so that it doesn't require a huge development effort.
It also seemed like one of the things I've noticed that has changed over the last few years is BI used to really be an afterthought, and BI developers and teams were usually very small. There was just one or two, and they really had to go dig through all these data sources to find anything that was meaningful. And these days, data is a priority, and it's inserted into the process, you know, while systems are being built, so that it's easier to measure and do dashboards and scorecards and stuff at the time, rather than somebody trying to go back later and figure out how they can manage that reporting.
That's a great point. And when we look at every scenario we look at from a sales and marketing perspective now, BI and the analytics and insight needs are actually baked into those scenarios up front. So it's not, like you said, something we do later. You know, and that tends to be that used to be the poison around companies 5-6 years ago, is that you would build a system, you would get all this information, you'd build like a CRM system, and then someone would say, how do we get the data back out of it? Now we need to figure out what to do. And now we're actually thinking that is a forefront to the exercise all up.
Yeah, to build on that a little bit, the other thing that has really struck out for me, if you think back 5 years ago, the kind of reporting we were doing was what I consider diagnostic and descriptive, right? It was the scorecard analogy. Is it green, yellow, red? If it's red, oh God, we got to figure out what to do. Now people are using data to understand what decisions do I want to make going forward? What are the trends I'm seeing? What should we be thinking about? And so seeing that change is super important, because that's how you get to real digital transformation. That's how you change your business model. It can't be the old report card of just tell me that I hit my numbers at the end of the month.
Right.
And so that's been fascinating to watch that transformation at all levels, not just IT people, but in the business.
Yeah.
Also, one more thing to add is that five years ago, we are more on the waterfall methodology. So it always took time to design and develop the BI solutions on top of our ACP data. Now, leveraging Power BI and modern solutions, we enable our internal customers with more self-service scenario. Then they are able to, they are empowered with the direct insight from our data, rather than waiting for multi quarters to get the value. So Power BI is really a game changer in our huge amount of ACP data. People can mash up the data from multiple sources and then really get a very quick value.
Yeah, those are all great answers. one thing I would add to that is, in the last 5 years, I've seen a total transformation of how we use data to make every business decision within the company. So in my views of talking to the business and talking to all of you, gone are the days of making off-the-cuff decisions or, you know, sitting down in a room and all throwing ideas up on the board to create strategy. Everyone, with Satya on board, it really has been every decision within the company is based upon data. And that's been a mantra that I've seen change throughout the whole company. And that's a huge opportunity for all of us and a great lesson learned for the people out there listening to this webinar. So one of the other questions that I see here is are you moving to Power BI? We talk about Power BI a lot here. So how are you moving to Power BI solution? And are you moving it on-prem or in the cloud? And sort of what is that roadmap for all of you?
So from our perspective in sales and marketing, we are aggressively moving after Power BI in the cloud. And for us, the value proposition, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, was that we can tailor those experiences based on the role of the person that's is using it. Like the senior executive, she's going to want to see a much more high-level view of her business. The seller at the individual level, or the sales manager, wants to look at that kind of team level. And I think what I've realized over the years is if you think about the idea of like a sales pipeline, a seller has no concept of a pipeline. They just have what they're working on. That pipeline notion becomes more crystallized as you move further up the hierarchy. And being able to use Power BI to give very specific information to a seller that they can action and drive action from is very valuable for them. And that's one of the values that we see in Power BI is that, again, with a very limited infrastructure investment and a very limited development investment, we can actually reach a much broader audience much more quickly and with a much higher level of satisfaction. If you give a seller a spreadsheet with 500 metrics on it, because that's what their executive sees, they're not going to use it. Yeah. They don't care.
I mean, I always equate Power BI as the Trojan horse to our data culture transformation. Yes. You think back 5-10 years ago, we've had tons of initiatives at Microsoft to try and do what I would consider enterprise data management best practices and create standardization about how we do reporting. And all in the past, the approach was, start with the warehouses and the databases, have conform models, to try and constrain everything. And we never would get those initiatives to work. Power BI, the beauty about that is you're putting the presentation layer in the hands of an end user who can actually start to visualize data the way they understand data. And when they see that and they see the power of that and how that works, it builds the excitement to then get all those other things done that we know in IT we need to get done in the company, such as data standardization, data quality, right, improving how data flows in and out of systems. But you can't get to that if you don't show the value to the business people on what's possible and how they can change their lives. And that, to me, the Power BI adoption and the move to the cloud, that's been driven because people see value. It's not just because Satya said, we got to move to the cloud.
Yeah.
Right. And so that to me is interesting and a big aha. Because I was in the camp before of, no, first we got to fix the warehouses and the databases. We'll do things in order. And it's completely changed my view, seeing how a product like Power BI can really help jumpstart that transformation.
Yeah. And along those same lines, historically the giant data warehouse projects were expensive and time consuming. Yeah. And once you actually landed it, you had no interest in getting rid of it because you've invested millions of dollars potentially if you're a large enterprise in landing this ubiquitous solution it's monolithic really. Power BI allows you to have a level of disposability. If you need to spin up a piece of information that or a report that you need for 3 months to get you through a quarter, a month to get you through the end of the month, and then you throw it away because it doesn't matter because the investment wasn't so significant. You can easily iterate on something. You can dispose of it if you don't know it. You can improve it. It doesn't matter. And that's and there's time investment, absolutely. But the reality is you're not spending a year, 2, 5 years to try to land some gigantic solution anymore.
In infrastructure, while we do have a centralized BI team who does a lot of ETL and data processing and understanding the data sources, I think the one really cool thing about Power BI is that it lets just the average user build their own reports and doesn't put such a burden and a backlog on our centralized BI teams. And I think people really like that because then they can build out their own unique reporting. And we're always talking about your work is really great, but a lot of the stuff that we do in infrastructure, isn't always the understanding of it isn't very portable. And if you can get a report on top of that, it really can showcase your work and up level the service that you're providing.
Well, and in all of your situations, going into business review and having Power BI behind you and having that be real-time data, because we've all been there.
Yeah.
Where we've done reports and we spend two, 3, 4 weeks doing this, We deliver the presentation, and that data is now 4 weeks old. And they said, okay, well, when was the last time you did this data crunch? Oh, it was a month ago. Okay, wow. How do we get real-time data? And Power BI is that answer. So that's really good conversation. So one of the other questions that I see here is, how do we support the growing demand for working with data when everything is moving to Azure? So talking about moving to the cloud, how has that changed your business? How has that changed your experience with the data, executives' data, and personal data?
Well, my organization has a service we provide that tries to help groups like Chen Wei's. So he has a massive SAP implementation. That SAP implementation's data is needed throughout the company. You're talking hundreds of teams that need that data for different purposes. So we try and help make it easy for them to consume that data, right? Have a central place you can discover, know where it is, ask to subscribe to it, obviously the permissions and securities check that you should be getting access to the data, and then you can get those feeds. And in terms of the cloud and ease of use, a lot of the company, all the company, to be quite honest, is moving to the cloud. And so for us, it's been, how do we make that a frictionless access in the cloud, whether you've gone with PaaS or IaaS? And honestly, we haven't found it harder than on-prem. In some ways, it's actually been easier, mostly because our products are designed to try and share the data in those environments, right, where that wasn't always the case in on-prem. And on-prem, we had to figure it out. So I think it's been really good. It's made it easier for us to really try and get to that vision of one unified data platform, which we'll never have from a physical perspective, but for us, it's you as a consumer trying to find data, it should be frictionless and it should seem like one single experience. And so I feel, and I'd love to get your guys' perspective, that us moving to the cloud and the kinds of offerings we're having is making that easier now.
Yeah, definitely. For us, I sort of see with our internal businesses that we have sort of two groups. We have one group of people who are building new applications, so they're able to deploy modern applications right out of the gate, but then we have an older population of applications where they don't necessarily have as many resources as they once had when they were first built, and so they don't necessarily have, you know, developers and other resources to migrate those into Azure services. So it's very important for us to work with the Azure product groups on making sure things are very native and that the migration of that is simple and easy, but we also know that that works outside of Microsoft too, because there's a lot of people in that same situation where they're taking existing applications and trying to move them into Azure without doing a complete reinvestment of their entire application.
Also, one pain point we were facing, and it's customer feedback too in the past, is that they had to spend a lot of time understanding our ACP data model, which is completely, it's a physical data model, is a very complex model. So that's really occupying a huge amount of their time, understanding the model, then match up with their own model. By leveraging Microsoft Teams services, we are really, that enables us to, and our customers, really enable our customers to focus more on their business problem rather than the technology or physical model problem. They could just focus on their business model, which is just across the whole enterprise. Then we as IT team here will do the engineering work to match up the translated physical model to the logical model, then expose that into a centralized data catalog for enterprise users to discover our data. So by leveraging all the Power BI data catalog, that really is a very good game changer.
And you know, one thing that's kind of an unanticipated benefit that we found is that in the migration to the cloud, it gave us a great excuse to inventory and assess the necessity of all our data assets and clean them up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff in a company like Microsoft, which has been around for more than 40 years now, that we've collected a lot of data over those years, and some of it just sits there for years and years and years. And we were able to say, 30% of the data we're bringing into this particular data warehousing scenario isn't valid anymore. No one cares. It's not being used, and there's no value to it for us. So, you know, we use it as a kind of a clean house exercise as well.
And speaking of a clean house and metamorphosis from on-prem to the cloud, Dana, one of the questions that's targeted towards you is, how did we go from providing services to our database engineers and DBAs to providing on-prem solutions from your standard now to the Azure cloud as a default standard. What took place? How did that change? How did you change that standard? And what did it look like to your organization?
Yeah, so within IT, we had a standard process where people would submit a request for hardware or some kind of infrastructure, VMs, we had tool sets around that, some automation, but a lot of it was very dependent on teams, an actual person doing the work. So you submit a request to build out a server, it would go through an approval process, the hardware would be ordered, the server would be built. This is all very time consuming and lengthy. It takes a lot of people to manage those kinds of requests. So as Azure came on the scene, we realized that we could shift this process into more of a self-service model. And so these days, how it's set up is you don't have to go anywhere and submit a request. You manage your own subscription, or you have someone who manages your subscription for you, and you have users that are specific to your application or to your business, doing work inside those subscriptions. So for me to get a VM or an Azure SQL database or to deploy any one of Azure features just takes me a few minutes. I just go in and do it myself. I don't need to go to a centralized corporate website where I need to go through days, weeks, months worth of process in order to get equipment or assets assigned to me. So, and I think that we've been doing this as a standard for about a year when we switched over from we don't even really have the ability anymore to request on-premise equipment. It takes special approvals and lots of things because we really have this, encouraging people to use Azure and manage their own resources in a self-service way.
Yeah. And how does that affect guys like you, Michael?
I can tell you, being a customer, it's amazing. Like, I remember the days where I had to plan for my systems and my platforms months in advance that I was going to have a bump up in capacity need, so we could get the servers in the labs, we could get everything set up, I could get access to them and do what I needed to do, and then finally get my application stack installed. And so now the fact that I can just go to Azure and yep, I got it spooled up. Dev, you need more environment? Here you go.
Right.
Super simple. And so I love that we've changed to that, because as a customer, being a customer of you, makes it way easier for me.
I think the other benefit is that instead of us sort of owning the bill, that cost is kind of put back in with the businesses, and you understand more what you're spending rather than being blind to, I think sometimes at Microsoft we're a little bit blind to some of the costs that we incur,
yes,
to put it lightly. But I think when you have it in this scenario, like your group now, since you know what your bill is, you're a little bit more cognizant of how much money you're spending and how many resources you're spinning up, not leaving things that are unused laying around. It's important to optimize for cost.
Well, the thing I think of, and similar to what Michael talked about, is not only for planning ahead for a new application, but what happens if an application you have in production is being taxed beyond its the hardware's capacity. So we don't have that long lead time now anymore. If I need more RAM for a piece of hardware, I don't need to worry about that. And then from a budget perspective, I don't need to, years ago we had to hassle with depreciation costs and hardware replacement costs. And that was always, the way our budget process sometimes wasn't always great about that. You might not find out until already after the new year started, by the way, we need another $150,000 to change the hardware out on this, and we know you didn't plan for it. Now we don't have to worry about that anymore. It's very predictable from an Azure perspective for us, and it's simple if we do need to extend capabilities to meet new needs.
Yeah. And we do have to pay for Azure.
Yes. We do pay for Azure.
So we get to be like our customers now. I mean, that's the other change, because it's funny when you said that. We always used to never think about the cost of our software, because, hey, give us the software. Now I've noticed we're taking much more of a customer-centric approach where we are paying for Azure. I do have to worry about my subscription. If my devs have this code just running and spending money, I see that bill and go, look at it, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
So that's definitely changed.
Well, and even in operations, it's become, an exciting topic for us to talk about whenever we find a place where we can save money and we can actually measure it because we have data. It's very rewarding to be able to swoop in and analyze what services we've deployed. So, there's cost in in the features and the assets that we're consuming, but there's also cost in people. And like I said, being able to switch it from a user request-based process to a self-service thing, we're taking a lot of the dependency on operational costs out of it. And also when people choose to use PaaS services rather than IaaS services, there's other things that you get out of Azure that are a cost benefit, like you don't have to maintain servers, they do the patching for you. Mm-hmm. There can be a lot of benefit there as
well. It totally changes the system administrator that you typically had on-prem to a newer, higher level when you move to in the cloud, for sure. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, one of the questions that we were getting is what do you think the percentage of our environments are SQL Server 2016. SQL Server 2016 has just recently been announced and made available. Dana, maybe this is a question for you, but any of you seen benefits to SQL Server 2016? Any sort of benefits, productivity gains? So if you could share your experience, that'd be fantastic.
Well, for us, that we, you know, using Azure, we specifically with SQL Server 2016, we, you know, we deploy using templates in Azure, and the default build for that is SQL 2016. So we're seeing, we do have a big population of various versions of SQL, just like every other company, but our focus is to always try to upgrade as quickly as possible, and then all new deployments are 2016.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, from our SAP team standpoint, we fully commit to the latest version of SQL Server 2. So before every release of SQL Server, we as SAP team, we are actually running our production on the beta version of SQL Server. So we are fully committing to that. And our currently, our SAP systems are mostly running on SQL 2016 now.
Okay.
And we are able to leverage page level the column store index or the in-memory features mm-hmm. from SQL Server 2016.
And there'll always be, I see the need of being able to use on-prem and in the cloud experiences. You know, not every organization within Microsoft, I don't know if you know the percentages of on-prem versus in the cloud. If you do, I would love to know that information, but there's always gonna be instances where you're gonna have an on-prem solution. And like as Dana said, their default standard is in the cloud experiences. But one of the things that when we talked to Charles and moving from a sales and marketing space, let me direct this question to you, if I may. How has data analytics changed your business from a sales and marketing perspective? It's kind of a higher related question. I've done some showcase work around predictive analytics and how that's influenced the sales experience. Love your thoughts around that.
Absolutely. So if you think about it, anyone who has worked with sellers before or the sales process, not just in Microsoft, anywhere in the world, you know that human-derived sales forecasts are very imprecise, probably on the order of about 45% accuracy. So it can be like Christmas morning at the end of the quarter for a lot of sales executives. You could do really well, you could be way off, and you have no real basis for that decision. It's kind of a gut feel at that point, and kind of your point about, you know, data-driven decision-making. What we're able to do and what some of the things we're modeling is, what's the likelihood that an opportunity to close? The seller may say, you know, I got this, I'm gonna win this. We can look at historical factors and say, no, you probably don't. You have a very low probability of winning this. And we can do the same thing with leads as well. We can take a look at the different factors that come in a sales lead, our marketing. I'm on the sales side of the family and sales and marketing IT, our marketing peers. They're doing wonderful work actually in assessing the quality of leads that are coming out of the marketing feeds, if you will. And in some cases, we've increased the close rate on those 100% over when we've done A/B testing by just doing some basic lead qualifications. We're continuing to iterate on that with every release and every sprint to make sure that when our sellers and our partners get this information, it's more actionable and more likely to succeed. And you know, like I said, when you look at the forecast, we're getting to the point where we can start looking at forecasts and say you're wrong. This is how you need to start thinking about this, and that's when it changes data analytics, because previously everything scorecard was like a report card. How did you do in this last quarter? How did you do in this last year? Now we want to say, what are you going to do next quarter? What are you going to look like next year? Where are the areas where we need to invest? Where are the growth areas? Where do we need to hire more people? Where do we need to get more training and more relevance for our sellers? That's how it's changing for us.
To build on that, it reminds me of a story that I heard from a team member who helps sales and marketing organizations figure out how to do some analytics and find different ways to change their business. And the story that stuck with me was it was in Japan. There was a sub in Japan that hadn't met their numbers consecutively, and it was a big deal. Like, they were really stressed out. They were worried about what's going to happen. And they looked at the data and did some white space analysis, and it was amazing. They blew through their numbers that quarter and actually doubled their numbers for the year. And so just to think of that, like the fact that they used data to, instead of, to your point, the forecasts were always off. They'd never close the deals they thought they'd close. To then look at that and be able to look forward and go, here's where we need to focus. Here's the opportunities that we're not seeing. That was shocking to me, like to hear that story, because that's a personal impact, right? That's people who are stressed out about their jobs who are now performing super well. So,
yeah, it gives us the opportunity to do white space, cross-sell, upsell analysis, things that we haven't done exceptionally well in the past. And, you know, we are identifying those other opportunities. What's the next logical product you're going to buy? If you bought this, you're likely to buy this as well. If you're going to, you know, that's the things we're trying to tease out for our sellers and our sales organization. And it starts with the marketing and the awareness of the need there, and then drives all the way through. And connecting those data elements as they move through our sales and marketing processes is critical for us.
Well, and one of the things that, in talking to you before, Charles, was, you know, you talk about having that rear view mirror of how we did in the past, having that futuristic predictive analytics approach of what's going to happen in the future. But then you also have this prescriptive view as well that I'm seeing that you guys are integrating into your products internally to Dynamics CRM and MSX is what are the things that you need to do to close that business? And I think that's a game changer for our salespeople. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. As anyone knows who's probably watching this right now, is that the landscape is changing from a technology perspective. And, you know, years ago we could sell Office and Windows and that would be enough. Nowadays, things are changing. The type of consumption people want, the self-service people want, the ability to make choices on their own and have more of a customer-driven impact into what you're buying. You know, we don't want to just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks anymore. We want to understand what products we need to be doing, how we're engaging customers. So now we can tell sellers, you need to have a partner engaged. You're not going to land this deal without, you know, with expertise for implementation from a partner perspective. And if you think about it, I can't just sell, say, Dynamics CRM to a 20-seat customer and hope that things go well. They probably don't have the expertise to implement it successfully, so they're going to need assistance. So we can look at it. We can look at an opportunity and say, you don't have a partner engaged in this. How are you going to land this, and how is the customer going to be successful? Because it's not about that first sale that matters. It's about continuing that relationship and that lifetime customer value. And if you just leave a customer to dangle with a huge implementation failure, they're probably not going to trust us again to come back on these things. So that's, you know, from our perspective, being able to tell sellers, you know, and sales managers what they should be focusing on as you go through the sales process and the lifetime support process is really important for us. And data gives us that lens that we can apply.
Well, and consumption-based reporting,
yes,
as we move forward, will be a big deal.
Absolutely. It's not, you know, for any business that's involved in cloud sales, you know, even if you're a consumer of cloud sales, you want to understand how I'm consuming a product that I've licensed or I've purchased. And as a seller, I want to understand how my customers are using that. And ideally, they should see the same information. Yeah. That's the big piece of it. You know, we used to get away with having different pieces of information for different constituencies. Now, it's got to be the ubiquitous data. And, you know, as we try to plan out how a customer life cycle is going to run, we need to understand what they're consuming, how they're consuming. Why aren't they using Azure if they have a subscription? Why, you know, they bought 1,000 Office 365 licenses, why have they only deployed 200 of them? So, you know, either we've oversold and we need to help adjust that, or we need to figure out what's the barriers to adoption. Because from a customer, you know, a customer looks at the bottom line of that contract and they've purchased 1,000 licenses and they're using only 20% of that, they're not going to be satisfied and they're not going to want to continue to do business in that modality. So we need, you know, having that information and having our sellers and our service engineers be able to talk to customers about how they're using things and where their challenges might be are important.
Yeah, and I want to build on that. That example and how you describe that, that's not just for the tools for our field and sales to use. It's even how we in IT need to think about how we measure ourselves. And so consumption right now and customer value are the two key measures if we're scorecarding anything around the services we provide to Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And that is a big shift. And I think that thinking, like every company, if you're an IT person in a company, that's how you need to think about your job. It's about how are you helping your employees use and consume the things you're building for them and making sure that you can measure the value that it's providing them.
And how do you measure that value? Is it through surveys? Is it through usage reports?
It's a combination. Some of it we get from telemetry because we can see how they're using features and capabilities and if they're landing it.
Right.
But some of it is you do need to talk to them. You need to understand what they're doing, how they're using it, if they're able to his point, were they able to close deals? Were they able to figure out a better way to do a marketing campaign? Were they able to figure out a better way to utilize the power in the building, right? And so we reduce building costs. You have to know the value that your customers are getting. So IT can't just sit behind the curtain and say, well, I gave you the service, here it is, and I'm measuring the servers running and, you know, people are processing it. You need to know that you're impacting the business.
And I think I'd like to ask the question to you guys around how you measure your levels of satisfaction or your service. So if you, Dana, if you could talk a little bit about that. Because you're talking to the customer all the time. Mm-hmm. And how do you measure satisfaction from their perspective?
I would say it's that in and of itself, that's a difficult question, and it's not necessarily a data point that I collect and report on. But what we do look for are things like, you know, how easy is it for people to deploy a solution? How is the report? So the three of our focus areas are cost optimization, performance, and security. And okay. So we always look for opportunities in those areas to give the user as much information as possible so that they can make decisions. And it, you know, if we're hearing a lot of frustration in the system, then we know that that's an area that we need to improve on. But we do try to proactively, you know, provide that kind of information so that people feel a little bit ahead of the game and they're not being surprised with, oh, a patch came out that I didn't know about, or their spending is out of control in a particular area and it actually wasn't necessary, or maybe they could improve their performance somehow and they could, you know, go resize a resource that they're using. And so those are always, that's always good feedback, is when people feel like they're secure, they're optimized, and they're saving money.
Well, and that's speaking of saving money, I know you're being humble, but I know your organization saves millions of dollars every year by being able to reprioritize and reutilize unused hardware. And based upon that consumption, they're able to give that hardware back or repurpose that in different ways that can be repurposed and save hundreds and hundreds of man hours and millions of dollars. So that's awesome. If you could talk a little bit about how SAP is utilizing this and keeping our customers happy based upon the data, that would be fantastic if you could.
We basically, so from my perspective, since I'm more focusing on the technology architecture, so we would just communicate with customers from time to time, just trying to hear from customers, right, from our project quality, from the architecture, does it really satisfy customers' need? Then there is also a point like we through the survey with customers, we are able to find that we, in the past, we replicate data in too many places. So that led to the slowness of our project. Mm-hmm. Then that's the driving factor for us to start building the business cases to leverage features from the cloud BI perspective, from the centralized Aurora data lake perspective, okay, to consolidate our patterns and solutions. Then when we start building business cases like that, that's a very natural conversation with our stakeholders. Then that really can also in turn drive our technology roadmap too.
Very good, good. And speaking of Azure Data Lake, and those types of technologies. Anyone, one of the questions is what's the panel's experience of using Azure Data Lake or, you know, we've talked a little bit about Azure, Azure ML, we talked a little bit about predictive analytics. Any comments around Azure Data Lake and some of our Cortana Intelligence Suite technologies? We talked a little bit about how SAP's using it. Any experience on the panel with those technologies?
I guess I'll start. Actually, my team is heavily in talks with them because one of the platforms we have is that data sharing platform. And we're trying to solve the problem that traditionally is solved. If you have app A and app B, and B needs A's data, usually A talks to B, the developers get together, decide on an API and a data contract, code it, and then share. You can't do that at a company this size with the amount of systems we have. it would be millions and millions of dollars. So we created this whole custom solution in IT that allows a central way to have a distribution environment that shares that data. And Chun Wei's team actually, with SAP, utilizes that as a publisher of data. And so one of the things we're trying to talk with the product group about is specifically with ADL around data storage and data distribution is how can we take that scenario and make that an enterprise deployable scenario through our Microsoft stack without this IT custom code. And so we've been working very closely with the product group to help them understand, because it's a little bit different scenario than, say, a big team building something on ADL. Mm-hmm. This is 500 to 600 concurrent connections a second trying to get data out.
Right.
And so, yeah, we're betting on getting these capabilities native in the product so a company outside of Microsoft could build the same kind of thing with the Microsoft stack.
Okay. We have exactly the same scenario. We have a program we called First and Best. Mm-hmm. Where we work directly with the product groups on, you know, we dog food, pilot, POC, all the ways that we can participate and help improve the products. And a lot of those right now, because the PaaS solutions for data products are sort of progressing right now, they're new and upcoming, so we have, you know, SSIS in Azure Data Integration Services is what they're calling it. You know, data lake, data factory, how can we exhaust data from different Azure resources and partner with OMS to do more reporting over there. So we're trying to be as cutting edge as possible and help. We have the same, trust me, we have the same issues inside Microsoft as other companies have out. And I think that MSIT specifically, you know, we're a really good resource for the product groups to be able to test and try out things and get a good set of requirements.
Yeah, I totally agree, and not always will our solutions always provide end-to-end capabilities, and we'll always have that need to build and extend on all of our technologies, and that's a beauty of our technologies because they are open, and we can extend the cross capabilities within the organization. And speaking of that, one of the questions that we are seeing here is how do you ensure, and I think this may be from a Power BI perspective, Michael, targeted towards you, and then if the panel wants to discuss it, how do you ensure the success of Power BI takes off inside the company? How do you communicate that to the rest of the world?
Yeah, so this is probably one of the biggest things I'm most passionate about. This company has always been a technology company, and we tended to try and solve these problems with technology. And the thing we learned with Power BI when we first tried to drive adoption in the company was very quickly, this is about people and process more, if not the same, as technology. And so we've put a lot of focus in helping people understand, why would I want to use Power BI? Why do I want to change from what I've traditionally been doing? Whether I'm an IT person who's always been the person who wrote the SSRS reports, right? Mm-hmm. Give me the requirements, I'll build the report for you, here's your report. Or you're the end customer who's been waiting for this report and then gets frustrated that it isn't what you thought you were going to get.
Right.
And so most of our energy has been driving awareness and understanding of what the product is about, how you need to think differently about using data, what your role is in that data lifecycle, whether you're an IT person or a consumer. And once we get those transformational changes on how people think, the technology becomes an easy thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Power BI is not hard to use.
Right.
What makes it hard is not understanding the context and not having the right support, where the IT guy is providing the data in a way that the business guy can use it. And so that's been our journey. And that's the thing I talk with other companies the most about, because that's the blind side that you don't really think about. And it's forced me as an IT person to change my skills and capabilities. It's not about can I code and talk about how to build a warehouse.
Right.
It's about how can I do a change program.
And how does, just to spin off of that, this my question is how do you see that data analyst or that BI guy that, you know, that's in the dark room with the really thick glasses that traditionally is focused on data, to now your product managers, your HR professional, maybe your executives are getting, you know, pretty affluent in BI. How does that change the roles within the company? How does that change your relationship with the businesses here at Microsoft?
Well, in IT, we become an enablement function. Like, my team used to be the doers 5 years ago. We built the warehouses. We built the reports. Now we enable. We help the business understand how to do it. And it's always better that way. I mean, I'm never going to know what a marketer does day in and day out to the point where I can build the report in a way that I get a breakthrough insight. Only the marketer can do that. So I need to enable the marketer to be able to understand how to use the data so they can have those breakthroughs. If you rely on the IT guy to do it, it's never going to happen. You're going to get operational efficiency, and that's it. And so that's how our roles have changed. When we talk about what we do, I talk about I enable.
Yeah. Any breakthroughs, BI, Power BI breakthrough experiences from your world that you went from, oh, I've got the data and hundred thousands of rows of Excel spreadsheets to now moving to Power BI and to that white space analogy, boom, there is the answer. Any experiences with that across the panel?
Well, you know, when we look, I've talked about this example a little bit, but when we look at like things like pipeline and forecast and pipeline coverage, it's been very easy for us to quickly turn around a view for the top executive, for her dashboard, down to the individual seller to say, this is what I'm committed to, this is where I'm standing against my quota. So if I have to sell $1 million this quarter and I've got $1.25 million in my forecast, I've got good coverage there. And so, you know, at the individual level, I can look at that. And then at the macro level, the executive will say, hey, look, we're looking to be $100 million over this quarter. That's fantastic. And it's, you know, be able to spin that around in a matter of weeks at the most. You know, we pull some data in from different sources, we munge it, and then we can easily, you know, apply different Power BI views on top of that are contextual to the person, how they want to see it. So if I'm at the top level, I might want to see it in a completely different way than the individual who just wants to see my little, you know, we like to use the speedometer metaphor. So I can see my little speedometer. I'm looking good. So that, you know, makes it so much easier. And there's no custom development. And we take a hard line in sales and marketing IT, especially on the sales side. We do not want to customize. We're trying to be a first and best user and give that feedback to the product groups. So we don't customize. You know, we don't create custom, you know, visualizations. We'll ask for them if we really desperately need them and work through that. But, you know, we're able to use the product out of the box to do this. And so it drives our development cost and timelines way down.
And to our customers, a wow factor is really on the self-service side. So Power BI gives them the opportunity to really to run the BI by themselves. Then they are able to really mesh up data from different data sources. Mm-hmm. Then that enables our conversation with business more focusing on the business problem and much less on a technology or a connector problem. So okay. That's really Power BI is also mindset shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the questions that we have here is talking about the percentages of on-prem versus in the cloud Power BI experiences. Michael, can you talk about our Power BI on-premise solution, and how are we moving? Do you know what the percentage is or the experiences are?
You know, 2 years ago it was probably 80-20 on-prem connection versus in the cloud. Yeah. Now I'm guessing it's around 70-30 cloud to on-prem, okay. And that's a guess. I don't know the exact number.
Yeah, we're really basically flip.
If I look at my org is almost all now in the cloud. We have very few things on-prem. Now, I do still like having things on-prem because, again, there's not very many companies in the world that are all 100% in the cloud. At least, I don't think there are. Maybe I'm wrong. So it's good for us to know how it works, and it shouldn't matter. I mean, that's the big thing I always talk about. When I talk about a capability I want from the product group, it shouldn't matter where I have the data, whether I have it in the cloud, on-prem, on my laptop. Who cares?
Yeah.
It should just work.
Is there any reason why a customer... and I'm just spinning off of this question, so just tell me if this is a stupid question, but I think, is there any guidance for somebody who is saying, I'm looking to you to help me make that decision. Is there any specific scenarios that are better for on-prem or vice versa?
I am not steeped, so I might have to refer you, because I'm not steeped into the only thing I could think of why I'd want to stay on-prem. I can't think of one because it's just such a pain to procure on-prem hardware. Maybe there's some tenting that needs to be done, but I don't know with Azure how the tenting would work. And what I mean by tenting is if you had like a very private project where you needed to be very secure about where that physical server sits and access to it, not just from a internet perspective, but from a physical perspective, maybe that's a reason.
I would say kind of like what you said a year ago, you know, that would have been an easier question to answer. But
right. These
days, you know, the speed at which new features are being enabled in Azure, almost by the time you say, I can't move to the cloud because of X, then somebody comes along and says, well, that's already just got deployed last week.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just didn't know about it yet because right. So many new things are coming out all the time.
Because that was one of the main, our customers, and we went through that. It was like, okay, is the cloud secure enough? And I think we've proven to our customers, our internal employees that say, oh, it's just not secure enough. We've sort of, you know, provided insight into that and saying that, yeah, if we are running our business, our information security team is running in the cloud, then I think you should be able to run in the cloud as well. Yeah. Go ahead, Charles.
I met a customer about 2 years ago, and he was a CIO, and I wanted to divulge the customer because they didn't give me explicit permission to do so. But I was talking with them about cloud, and I said, you work in a sensitive industry with a lot of personal information, personal for your clientele. How did you convince your executives that cloud was the right move for you? And his answer was interesting. He said, you know, I took a tour of your data center, and then when, you know, they walked us through different safe security protocols that you have in place, and there is no way I could ever hope to match that in my own data center. Wow. And so for me, it was a no-brainer. Once I understood this, you know, the security and the scale at which you offered, yeah, it was an easy decision.
Yeah, to us, it's also a fairly natural thinking. So we are on cloud. So a lot of our applications are running on an ISVM.
Okay.
And from the scalability standpoint, from a cost saving standpoint, we have been seeing a lot of values. Yeah, then now our focus is more towards centralizing our technology solutions, particularly from the data warehousing and BI standpoint, onto a real data lake-based BI. So that could really save us further of the storage cost and data warehousing project cost. So that's the pain point at this moment. And we still have, for good or bad, we still have data in different on-prem SQL Server-based databases. But now we want to really consolidate all those feeds onto a real data lake-based central place for BI purpose.
I don't know about you guys, but this has been fascinating for me because for a data analytics space, every customer has different needs. And whether it's they're investigating Power BI or whether they're investigating SQL Server or Enterprise Data Warehouse or moving to the cloud with their data, every customer is different. And I'm so glad that you guys were here to provide that experience that how, you know, you guys work together collectively to provide data analytics environment to all of us Microsoft employees. So, you know, want to say hats off to you guys. And working together, it sounds like it's a very unique experience in that you're all leveraging each other's experiences to making it real easy for us as the business to be able to utilize data analytics. I think we've got just a few minutes left in our roundtable. And so what I wanted to do is make sure that if you had any specific questions, to get those to us now, if you can, before we end the today's conversation. But I wanted to just leave with asking you one specific question. If you could give a customer one specific tip in your space, what would that be? And if you could go, Michael, and start, that would be fantastic.
Sure. The one tip I would give is kind of a two-piece one. One, you gotta enable in your company the ease of being able to share data. It's the number one thing. The way the market's going, if you don't do that as a company, in 10 years you're gonna be irrelevant. In order to do that though, don't make it a technology solution issue. Look at it from a people and process perspective. Get buy-in, help people understand the value. That's the only way you will realize it and get to a data culture.
I think mine would be kind of what we talked about earlier, which is don't make data an afterthought. Always, when you're developing your infrastructure, planning your environment, make sure that you're taking into consideration what you might care about next week or next year.
Nice. Charles.
And I would say that, I'm going to cheat and throw out two here. The first one is, analogous to what Michael has said, is that data and how we look at data is changing. And your organization needs to start that journey if you haven't already. It's less about the report card mentality. It's going to be about how can data improve how you're serving your customers and how you're serving your enterprise, how you can use predictive analytics, how you can predict what's going to happen, how you can change how you're approaching the business problems that you're trying to solve. And the other one actually is, and this is kind of personal, no matter what your skill level is technology-wise, you know, try some of the Power BI tools out there. I actually used the Power BI just to get more familiar with, to help somebody who's moving to the Seattle area to look at the school districts. And I actually built them a nice little Power BI, you know, map view of the different school districts, where they were in relation to our offices, and links out to the test scores and all that information. It was a good exercise for me, and it was very helpful for them, but it just gets you inured to the technology and understanding that it's, there's a little bit of a difference, but it's actually very simple once you get the concepts and the processes down.
So the tip I'd like to share is more from the product feature perspective. So for over 20 years, Microsoft and SAP are working together, and Microsoft has been developing a full suite of BI and data platform solutions surrounding SAP. And as a customer and a user, we have been benefiting a lot from our own product, and we are extremely confident in the Azure-based data platform solution too. And I would highly recommend our external customers to take a look at Microsoft BI and data platform solutions for your SAP problem to get the best value from your enterprise data.
That's perfect, you guys. Thank you. And we'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your day to come listen to this roundtable. And we appreciate all of your questions that you've given and the dialogue that is created between all of us here at Microsoft. This video will be posted on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase, along with a wealth of other information and resources on how we do IT here at Microsoft. We hold these events every week, so if you have any more specific needs around IT Showcase, come on back and take a look at, and bring your colleagues and take a look at what we're doing here at IT from an IT Showcase perspective. So with that, I want to thank you and have a great day.